Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, a tale of learning to connect to the vibrations of emotion in order to know more about life and death, healing, miracles, spiritual communication, and a guide to inner soul awareness. I am most delighted today to welcome Adele Paula Royce, author of The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes, to discuss a serious issue confronting society now more than ever, the story of what might lead someone to give up their precious life ahead of their expiration date. Hello, Adele, and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, Cheryl, thank you so much for having me and allowing me the time to share this message with the world.
Absolutely. Adele, as in listeners of Healing From Within well know, my guests and I share our most intimate experiences, leading us to appreciate life as a valuable journey towards self-actualization and the mastering of our emotions and thoughts, no matter how challenging life can become. Sometimes challenges offer us opportunities to learn more about human nature, life and death, and the mission of our soul journey. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Adele presents a semi-fictional look inside the mind and heart of a tortured soul on the verge of ending her own life. The question we might ask is, what could make a person feel that they no longer can go on living? In today's show, Adele Paula Royce, an artist and teacher of Western spirituality and a student of Kabbalistic practice, will share 27 entries by the narrator contemplating the thought-provoking question whether or not her life really is worth living. Adele, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember a person, place, or event that may have made a deep impression on their heart, mind, or soul, and which may have been part of their life plan or journey, and offer some insight into how early one becomes aware of the challenges of life.
You know, that is a very interesting question, and I must say it deserves a very concretized answer. And it's a question no one has asked me before. And I think the best way that I could answer something like that from the heart is to say that I believe that the journey of life, starting from the fetus, starting from the very beginning, before you even come out of the womb into this situation called life, you know, it's really a difficult answer. And the reason I say that is because you're coming into this world into an innately conditioned situation. And I guess I wanted to share this story with the world, you know, of people who are suffering. You know, to know that there's still hope, even though after years of spiritual searching, and I think this is what kind of ties into what you're asking, I had a realization, and I don't want to take, you know, anyone to take this the wrong way, your audience, yourself, but I did have a realization, and I've studied and done my homework for many, many years along this path and others, that there really is no cure for suffering. And in that, let me explain what I mean. It's inherent to the life situation, and it's really based upon your reactions and how you deal with it that allows you to come through to the other side and to live the day-to-day existence that would make life worth living. You know, and I felt I needed to tell it in a way that would kind of take the pressure off of people to find a solution that really doesn't exist, you know? So through the story of this protagonist, you can really follow her story through the process of realizing that suffering is in essence, inherent to existence, and how she comes to terms with it. You know, it's really paradoxical, Cheryl, but the key insight here is that although human suffering is innate, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And when you ask about, you know, what age something like this might come about, or what's the earliest recollection that, say, I myself or someone else might have. I could never speak in the name of another. But for myself, I would say that the human is probably formed at about the age of 7, and this has been from my teachings. And all of the belief systems, so to speak, are basically in place at that age.
Adele, I think what you're saying is the societal training and the creativity of the child's soul, when they came into this life, they came in with innate wisdom from previous lives and energy, because we are energy beings having a physical life here to discover more about the oneness of life, both our soul and our physical life. And what I think you're saying here is that at about 7, the soul, through societal training, starts to believe what has been programmed into them, and starts to push aside the pieces of their soul, the joyful parts of their soul. If we don't have an illness, a sense of depression, which a child can have, there are many illnesses a child could have genetically from their parents or their soul, needing to explore this life in a certain way. So, you know, taking that into consideration. But let me just say something about suffering. Now, the physical life is a challenging life because we are born to live, to grow like flowers and animals, and to, at some point, some live longer than others. We come in, I believe, with a program or a plan for our soul to be here a certain time and have certain experiences so that we can learn greater love and compassion. And at some point, yes, we have to leave the physical life. And so much suffering is based on the fear of death and illness and our thoughts and our programming and our ego or our mind-based reality, most of which is an illusion. You see, if we delve deeper into the soul and heart of our eternal life force, we don't have to choose to have suffering. We can choose to know that we are divine beings and will exist well beyond this short time on earth. And then again, dealing with other situations of family or abuses or fears or phobias or illness, that of course will for a time bring us sadness, but we don't have to stay in that state. We can be like children, infants, who one minute are crying and the next minute laughing, because they very quickly move through it and don't choose to stay in that state for too long. And if we detach from some of the worries and the intellectual pursuits given to us by many other people, we can come to an understanding that suffering is indeed a choice. Really a choice.
And you know, interestingly enough, I say in the book that it's meant to show people how to live by showing them how not to live.
Absolutely. Yes.
What do I mean by that? And let me explain. I mean, many of us live in what I call a false state of emergency. And to your point, a false state of emergency is basically reacting to something that feels real, but in essence, not true. You know, my teacher would always give two examples, which I believe would really make the point. And, you know, one true state of emergency could be if someone were pointing, say, a gun to your head, ready to pull that trigger. Another might be if a grizzly bear were coming towards you and ready to attack. Now, those are really true states of emergency, life and death situations, so to speak. However, when one is full of, as you say, fear and anxiety, depression, and all of those inner terrorists and untruths and false selves, you know, even though they aren't actually under any real threat, it feels very real to the one experiencing it, and it's not a fun game. But by no means is it true. So through this woman's story, you can learn that you don't have to live this way, and it is a choice, as you say, and how that realization can really result in living a more balanced, sane, and simpler life. And that's what the story is about. It's the first part of a planned trilogy, and it's a book going from life, death, to rebirth. And it's going to be taking you through what would bring a person to the brink. Then it's going to take you in book two through the actual underworld of interviewing all of the souls that died intentional deaths by their own hand. And then the third and final part of the trilogy is going to be coming back, and the subtitle to this book was written by the doctor who actually wrote the foreword, Dr. Gerald Epstein, my teacher. And it's coming back to life in a new way to really find out what your soul's purpose is and what you're really doing here. You know, sometimes it takes longer than many lifetimes, I suppose, to figure that out.
Absolutely. You know, what it is, yeah, absolutely. It might take many lifetimes to really appreciate the gift of life and the personal power that we hold within us to determine the differences between what's real and what's not real, the illusion of our mind and the power of our soul. Absolutely. But your book does show that indeed, when we live through certain experiences, we do have choices. We do have help. We have help from above, and we have help from here, and we can conquer this. Some people will not be able to conquer their choice to decide on suicide for many reasons. When the soul has had too much abuse, too much sadness, too much pain, and too much suffering, they do have a choice, free will, and we talk about that all the time and what it really means. But let's go on to what inspired you to write a book on suicide, which is a topic many people shy away from. And can you tell us any recent facts on the escalating problems these days? Because I know over 50% of all people who die by suicide suffer from major depression. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a very complex issue, and there are many, you know, associated elements associated with the essence of this, you know, phenomenon, this epidemic.
Yes.
You know, the demographics are mind-blowing. I did my homework when I wrote this book, and I have to tell you something, that it's jaw-dropping. I mean, I'm not saying that someone at 103 might not hypothetically, you know, try to do themselves in, so to speak, but, you know, the demographics are quite mind-blowing is the only word I can say. You know, children the age of 10 to 13, 13 to 15, you know, I'm not really sure how that happens. You know, it could be the technology, it could be the soul's journey, it could be, you know, this new phenomenon of bullying. I mean, I just heard, there are so many elements.
All of those things are creating major problems in our society today. Terrorism, the anger, the violence, and the fact that we don't have enough resources on the planet to sustain 7.5 billion people, and there's so much you know, so much competition to just survive. All these things are definitely a problem. And I have some facts here. Depression affects nearly 5 to 8% of Americans age 18 and over, and more people suffer from depression than coronary disease, cancer, and HIV or AIDS. And nearly 400,000 people attempt suicide in the U.S. each year, and about two-thirds of the people who complete suicide are depressed at the time of the death. So, you know, there are reasons for what's happening, and all of the things that you just mentioned are...
I mean, look at the combat rate. You know, suicide is outweighing the deaths of combat.
that's
a higher rate than combat death. Think about something like that. You know, it's a complex issue, and there are many different dimensions. I mean, you can look at mental illness, brain chemistry, family life, social structure. I wanted to explore it for more of and delve into it from more of a spiritual and moral dimension, which is often overlooked by the society. You know, suicide is fundamentally a state of hopelessness. You know, it's about one's internal freedom. As you say, you're born with free will. If you go with that concept, I do. And, you know, the internal freedom is where the power is. So you take, for example, someone like Dr. Viktor Frankl, who was in the concentration camps. Now, he explained that the only thing his captors couldn't take away from him was his internal freedom. You know, now that freedom is not something that you can surgically remove. So this book is about finding the path to one's own internal freedom. And yes, do you need to go through a dark night of the soul, so to speak, or some darkness to get to light? It's a given that everything in this life has an opposite. You wouldn't know hot if you didn't know cold. You wouldn't know sad if you didn't know happy. You know, you wouldn't know, I mean, anything has an opposite. So basically, you would not know light if you did not know dark. Right. And some people get away with it. They might be touched by the hand of source or, you know, a given few.
So what is life and why are we having a life? You know, as a hospice volunteer for 8 years, I watched people who were very sick and often in pain and who had experienced great difficulties in their lives. But I saw them fight to stay just a little longer, just to live. And in that longer time that they had, they made peace and they were ready to move on. Their souls were ready to move on. But let me say this. In my book, The Living Spirit, when asked by Donna if life was worth living after the loss of her young husband, who had survived death at Twin Towers, only to drown months later while trying to save his father's friend, I wrote this. I wrote this. Donna asked me if it was worth staying in this life with all its sickness and hardship. Without hesitation, I told her that I did believe life is a precious gift, no matter the challenges. I remembered the words my mother had said to me after her 3-month hospital stay, just before her passing. Life was good. I have known love. So I believe life with all its challenges offers us endless possibilities to have relationship with others and to expand our understanding of love and spirit, or the life and afterlife connection. One can often find a moment of great courage and love, even in a time when so much seems to be lost. But once again, this has to be cultivated, like any thought. Any beautiful poem or song or sunset or anything in life that has brought a great awakening to the beauty of that moment. We can't be in those moments all the time, but we certainly can. No, of course not. We're not here. We're not here to suffer, and we're not here to be unrealistic either. Get to live both a physical and a spiritual existence, and in finding the balance, it takes away some of the pain and fear and gives us some courage. So what about people who have contemplated suicide and then changed their minds and live to talk about it? Tell us something about that.
Well, I think that that's a very interesting concept, because, you know, what is that demarcation point of people feeling that they are going to the brink and then at the midnight hour decide, you know, that this is something that, you know, the will steps in?
Yes.
You know, I open the book with a very poignantly powerful, I mean, I'm a big Camus fan, and just for your audience, you know, Albert Camus was a French philosopher and a writer and author. And he proposed a very interesting question, and it was getting to the bottom of one of life's biggest questions, which can be difficult and very important. You know, but I believed he nailed the essential philosophical question, and it was from the myth of Sisyphus, which is actually a Greek mythological figure. And he was pushing a boulder up and up and up over this hill, and each time, you know, he got it to the top, the boulder would come crashing down on him. So I believe that our job in this life, is to, number one, not feel alone. And that's what I hope this book brings to people, a feeling that they are not alone in their suffering and that there is a way out and they do not need to lead a destructive life, and that life is more than just pushing a boulder up a hill. You need to kind of keep chipping away at it. And with each chip and with each, little movement and putting one foot in front of the other, getting into groups of maybe like-minded people, people that care and love and nurture and, like you say, blossom like flowers, like any beautiful piece of art or sculpture or music. I mean, look at what music, you say vibrational. I mean, honestly, if you put your hand, from my observation, under a high-powered microscope, you're going to see wave ripples and particles. You're not going to see solid mass. So we are in an energetic field. I mean, what would cause a person to walk into a room, say an event of 1,000 people, and not even knowing someone, just take a liking, say a love at first sight to one person and a distaste for another person, not even knowing them? It's some kind of a vibrational field that's running through everything. So when you're having a life and an existence, and I'm going a little off topic here, but I think that it really relates to your work as well, that when you're having wars every day in other parts of the world, or these vibrational upsets, I believe that all of this contributes to the soul's journey.
Yeah, Dell, it's very obvious to me that you're a very, very bright, creative, and talented person. Perhaps
Thank
empathic,
you.
perhaps empathic, and in meditation, downloading a great deal of information from the unified field of energy that you were just talking about. So many sensitive, empathic, and talented souls, perhaps 20% of the population, find this three-dimensional world very challenging and difficult to maneuver. But it is only through understanding energy and the seen and unseen world of the afterlife that perhaps these empowered beings can begin to accept who they are, what life's all about, and enjoy their time in a physical life. So you have found it. You have searched through your own, interpretation of life and socialization processes and beautiful poetry to understand that the greatest creators on this planet have always been undermined by the challenges of their physical life because their soul life is so superior to it. Adele, you wrote this. Yes, the fact of this life is hard to assimilate, even in the best of circumstances. People, it's what we're talking about here. People as a species have been brought to their knees from many a battle, whether it was fought within the confines of their own minds or with some outside force. Some live through it, some live past it, and yet there are those who choose not to live at all. But the truth is, the facts don't lie, and the facts and figures are brutal. International statistics say that each year approximately 1 million people in the world die by suicide, about every 14 minutes in the United States, and the military rate is surging. I think I found a loophole. I believe I died through the 27 notes in this book, reflecting parts of me that I loathed and was too afraid to face. And in some strange yet fascinating way, this journey of self-acknowledgement brought me to a true beginning. Liddell, as a seeker of truth, and your studies as a master teacher and a student of Kabbalah, you have learned the truth of life, you've learned the truth of death. And let me say this: the religions, many religions, say that if you commit suicide, you will have further suffering beyond this. That's not true. We have free will and the choice. And if a soul really finds it is time, they have completed all they can in this world, they will be accepted with love beyond this place. Their soul will be renewed and regenerated, and they will be with loved ones. In a show that has this type of intent, I like to say There is no punishment in living. There is only punishment in not living. And there's no suffering in living unless we choose to look at the darker parts of life and our being.
That's right.
But I think you and I, at this point, choose and hope our listeners choose to look at the brightness and the wonderment of life, no matter how hard. I've had a few readings from other mediums. I'm a medium myself. And one mentioned,
Right.
your life is like, it's a wonderful life. You're not realizing how many people you're reaching. So that you just mentioned it is very beautiful for our listeners to know. We're all living a wonderful life, and we all are
Well, you're
interconnected and a part of this divine tapestry of forever and eternal energy. So never fret, never fear. Well, my daughter always says, all's good. It's all good. It's all good.
It's all good.
And
That's
that's her
right.
way of
Have a
dealing
say.
with calamity and whatever. And I might want to say that we need to find our way home from death to life and from life to death, perhaps in learning to allow and accept life without judgment, too many illusions or beliefs. And we can begin, this is very important, to focus on the goodness within and the beauty without and find a sense of peace. That's what we're all
Oh, that's wonderful. That's,
looking for. It's not
yeah.
easy. It takes consistency and effort, and
Yes.
it takes time. So we must allow it. I want to thank you, Adele Paula Royce, author of The Little Black Book of Suicide, for sharing a very creative look through 27 suicide notes that explore the mystery, beauty, agony, and pain of physical life as you search for meaning of a universal message of love and compassion for self and others. To purchase this book, go to adelepaularoyce.com.
Yes, it's my name is the website, and it's through Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And there's also a wonderful audio book, which is a special treat for some music aficionados. It's a treat. I think it's well worth listening to.
Thank you, thank you. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have explored the reason some souls find it necessary to explore the themes of life and death, and how a soul so sensitive, affected by the energies of other people's situations and events or internal stresses to the physical body and mind, may find that dealing with the many issues of physical life are sometimes overwhelmingly painful. Perhaps the inconvenience of life brings one to know the soul in a more profound way, allowing for a greater compassion and love. If we live in a state of denial or numbness, we might not find our path to eternal life or beyond. So by opening up our mind and heart to the many challenges of our life, we actually live and then gather experiences and wisdom that will serve us in other times and places. Adele has shared an understanding of the physical and energetic principles of life in search of truth and her expanding or evolving soul. Adele wrote, I think about the great artists, the tortured souls like Pollock, Van Gogh, and Gauguin, whose desire to rage against themselves left the world with such staggering beauty. Why can't I look up to the sky one day and see the color has changed to pink or yellow or green? Why won't you let me know the ultimate game plan here as I travel through the turmoil of illness, death, fear, poverty, brutality, hate, and lack of wisdom that surrounds me every day? My father once said, life is easy and doesn't take much courage. What takes courage is to commit suicide. So my last why question is, I wonder if my father knew just how courageous he raised me to be. Adele and I would have you know that life offers many opportunities to know yourself. Some are more challenging than others, but in the middle of all pain and sorrow in life lies the moment of truth when you will see beyond the falseness of daily physical life and see the grandeur of your own soul and know whether in a body or out of a body, you are pure energy, and there is always the possibility for joy and happiness if you simply live. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, where you will explore life, death, and the wonderment of self, and listen to conscious, thoughtful authors who share their most intimate discoveries about life and death in hopes of making their personal journey a better one. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.